listening to the Apollo Podcast Network. One.
And welcome to another episode of the Launchpad Podcast presented by Apollo Media, all Houston, all original. We have a great podcast for you today. I always, as always, am your host, Don Knock. You can find me on Twitter and the new Air app at Don Knock. No underscore, no spaces. Y'all know where to find me. So a little bit of news here going forward. No longer an Apollo contributor. Now the second host of the Apollo Launchpad is Prodigy. Prodigy, go ahead and say hi to everyone as now the second host, along with Lashard, of course, who's still going to be hosting on the Saturday show. Prod, tell the people where they can find you.
What's up, everyone? I'm Hollywood now. you can find me at Prodigy NBA, without the Y on Prodigy. You can find all my stuff there.
Perfect.
On Twitter.
Perfect. And also joining us today, another Apollo member, we have Stanford KP. Go ahead and tell the people where they can find you at as well.
Hey, everyone. You can find me on Twitter at Stanford KP. You should know where to find me by now, hopefully, but glad to be here.
Yeah, and we're glad to have you. You know, another esteemed guest here with some good insight for us today. Just a little topic rundown. We're going to do a little bit of news and notes. Some stuff on the Celtics game that just happened on Monday, November the 22nd. And then we're going to do some draft coverage. We're going to talk about, you know, how some of the guys that project to be top picks in the next draft have looked so far through the college season through about, you know, a week and a half or 2 weeks. Then in segment three, we're going to do a little bit of a preview for the Bulls game that the Rockets are going to play tomorrow, November 24th, the day before Thanksgiving. So with that said, I'm going to roll straight into these news and notes segments here. Jalen Green went out today, like I said, the 23rd, and did a Thanksgiving turkey and backpack giveaway. So we just want to recognize Jalen Green, you know, doing some good things in the community. Love to see that. I think he partnered with Adidas, if I'm not mistaken, for that giveaway. But again, yep. Really like to see that. Really like to see him getting more involved in the community. He isn't a native Houstonian, he isn't a native Texan, so it's good to see him getting involved more in the Houston community and, you know, just doing more team type activities like that. Always good to see. Secondly, and this one we're going to see this going into tomorrow's game is Kevin Porter Jr. You know, he was injured for a few games with the hip injury, now going to be available playing against Chicago tomorrow. So another thing we love to see is KPJ back on the floor. I think this team has really missed his shot creation and his playmaking, even with Shingun able to do a little bit of it. You know, Eric Gordon and Jalen Green really were kind of thrust into doing a lot of playmaking while he was out. So good to see KPJ back. And then our third topic here for the news and notes segments, John Wall got involved in some Twitter drama yesterday following the game. Chris Mannix of Sports Illustrated had kind of been tweeting on and off the last couple of weeks at John Wall or about John Wall and just saying, you know, bringing up that Wall isn't playing with the Rockets and, you know, even though they're paying him and things like that. And finally, Wall decided to address it on Twitter. Mannix said, "The John Wall situation is pretty wild. He's traveling with the Rockets, sitting on the bench in uniform, but isn't playing. I don't know how that benefits the Rockets or Wall." And so Wall replied to that message and said, "Did not dress," just clarifying that, you know, he wasn't actually in uniform, but, you know, it was an interesting clarification for sure, because who's that really benefit, I guess? I mean, I guess that's kind of the question there is, like, everyone we thought knew what was going on with this situation and that Wall and the Rockets kind of mutually agreed on this, but it seems like maybe that's not so mutually agreed upon as we thought. And then in another tweet, someone at RealMo1_ tweeted, "You're getting punished for something you can't control." And then John Wall replied to him and said, "Facts." He actually did the old school retweet and then put the facts in the beginning, so it came up on his page. But You know, this is a very kind of strange sequence of events. Like I said, this may mean that Wall is not as bought into this sitting out scenario as, you know, we were led to believe. And it was always kind of a precarious setup the entire time. But KP, you're our esteemed guest today. You know, what are your thoughts on this Wall sequence? And what do you think? Do you think the team would even consider, you know, maybe bringing Wall back given how bad's looked with how we've started?
No, I think they'll stick to the plan. I think most of it is really a non-story. I think it's, you know, John Wall basically saying that this is not a really a big deal. There's no reason to come at him or really be talking about him because this is something that, as you said, already been agreed to for most of the season. I think at this point, you know, it's they're not going to deviate from the plan with him 16 games into the season. I think we're going to have to. I think he definitely wants to be playing, I'm sure, but, and maybe that's where the tweet came from. He just wants to be playing, but I don't think he wants to be playing for us, and nor do I think we want to be having him play either. So I really think it's a non-story. I think Chris Mannix is someone that's kind of, he's always kind of had interesting and mostly inaccurate tweets about the Rockets this past calendar year. So not making too much of it, but It was interesting that John actually took the time to respond to that, which is you didn't really have to do. But nonetheless, I don't expect him to do anything drastic here in the next couple of weeks.
And I think Mannix is a Boston guy. So, you know, we were playing the Celtics. So that may be why he was, you know, more inclined to chime in on this one. But like we said, he's been kind of throwing these type of jabs for the last couple of weeks. So, you know, not completely out of the blue either. Prob, yeah. What are your thoughts on this? And what do you think the punishment that he's talking about there means? Do you think that's, you know, not being able to be traded to another team? Do you think that's not being able to play at all? What are your thoughts there?
I mean, the optimistic in me wants to say, okay, what he means is like he can't control his contract. When he signed it, he didn't have like the scenario in mind. So teams don't want him because his salary is too big. And then he also doesn't want to give up money, so he can't be bought out, probably. So it just feels like it's a situation that's unfortunate for him because he'd rather be on a contender. And the Rockets have no problem with giving, you know, returning him to one, but there's just that big issue of his contract. Besides that, when it comes to Wall coming back and playing for the Rockets, I don't think that's a decision that's changed since the beginning of the season from either side, because from what I think Utah aggregated back then from a Tim McMahon podcast back then was, so the Rockets would like Wall to come off the bench and lead the second unit, maybe with KPJ starting, and therefore like you prioritized KPJ's development still. But then Wall kind of like, it's no good for me to be a bench piece on the worst team in the league. So either start me so I can like try and prove I'm really good, or it's not worth my time and probably will just hurt me on my next contract if my rep going into it is, oh, this guy was a sub in the worst team in the league. So just feels like nothing has changed. I don't think anything will change. And if something changes, I mean, the ball is really on Wall's side because he's the one that has to decide how much he's willing to give back to make a buyout happen, because a trade isn't happening. So if he really wants out quick, it's on him to decide how much does he want out.
Yeah, for sure. I think another thing with Wall is, right, and you're kind of touching on his contract there, the trend for the NBA seems to be that these guys are going to take the money if they're on that supermax or, you know, the designated player extension and things like that. They're going to take that money first. And I think we're going to see this with Zion. What I think is going to end up happening there is he's going to take the money from the Pelicans and then just immediately try to force a trade out. And I think these guys that have that type of pedigree, that's the way that they're seeing now, is I get the money first. And then on the back end, if I want to move around, I'll try to strong arm my way, you know, into going to my desired destination. I think Wall is really the first. Well, I say Kevin Love is probably the first one where, you know, they quickly realize that, you know, I may not have the leverage that these other guys have to get that done, like get that, you know, pushed all the way across the line. And, know, John Wall was able to get himself out of Washington, but now with the Rockets, it seems like he's in the Kevin Love scenario of, you know, I just don't have the muscle or the credibility or the desire around the league to, you know, push that thing all the way across the line to get to, you know, whether it's the Clippers or we heard Miami interested or things of that nature. You know, KP, do you want to have any comments on the Wall contract situation? And you know, that type of setup? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've been the only, or maybe one of the few, I guess, irrational people that think that actually a buyout could be possible. It may not happen in the next month, but because I think they will seriously try to explore trades when more players are able to be traded. But I really do think that there's a potential. And if you look at Kemba being bought out, Blake Griffin being bought out, all of them are like at the, you know, one more closer to 1.5 years of real salary than, you know, the amount that John has. And so it'd be interesting. I think come the trade deadline, if he may get desperate enough to potentially do that. So I just, I haven't given up hope on a buyout. I know there's been some reporting on it saying it won't happen. I really do think it could, but we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead, bro. Go ahead.
Yeah. I wanted to like, so just one last thing about that.
Yeah.
So the way buyouts work in the NBA, it's the amount of salary the player is willing to give back, the team can choose or can negotiate with the player. So imagine at the middle point of the season, Wall has 60, maybe 70 million left to receive. So imagine like Wall, like Kemba gave back 20 million because he had a contract waiting for him. But let's say Wall has only a minimum deal, or let's say Wall really wants out like Blake Griffin and he gives back like 13 million. The Rockets could like negotiate with Wall in a way that the 13 million come off his second year, and that way the cap hit next year is 13 million less, which means it gives the Rockets that little bit of flexibility. And the reason the Rockets don't want the buyout right now is because they don't, probably now it's not the same as the beginning of the season, but imagine a world in which the Rockets are good or better than expected, and next season there's an opportunity to like use 1 or 2 second round picks to dump expiring John Wall to a rebuilding team because the Rockets have a free agent they're interested in, and they know that the free agent isn't interested in them back. So they could spend those 2 first round picks and dump the contract if they knew there was a free agent coming to replace that and to like make up the value they're giving up to dump him. A buyout removes that possibility. Once the player's bought out, you can no longer trade that salary. It's called dead cap. You can't, like, it's going to be there no matter what. So that's why it's a tough decision, both for the Rockets to kill a lot of flexibility, and we've seen how much Stone values flexibility, and John Wall, that's actually the player losing the money, you know?
Yeah.
So just to round out this first segment, I just want to touch a little bit on the Celtics game that happened last night. The Rockets, they did play the Celtics. We saw them get off to a decently fast start. They were close. I think it was within 5 at halftime. And then really once the team came out at halftime, you had a very similar occurrence to a lot of other games this season where the other team really, really took it to the Rockets in the third quarter, blew them out. And then the Rockets slowly were climbing back in. But just some things I want to touch on in this game. We saw a lot more of Armani and Garrison Matthews. And I think that's something I would like to see a lot going forward. Armani got 25 minutes. He was 5 for 8 from 3 for 62.5%, which is very good. Matthews, only 1 of 6 from 3, but he still got 18 minutes, almost 19. And, you know, having those guys being able to be out there, move off the ball, attract the defense's attention, not let them clog up the paint and give some extra driving lanes for either Jalen, Şengün or KPJ and then Eric Gordon, of course, as well. That's something that I like to see. And, you know, Daniel Tice still got 25 minutes. Daniel House got 7 minutes. Those are the numbers that the guys are really watching. And most of House's minutes were in garbage time. So those are the numbers, like I said, everyone's really looking for. Kenyon Martin Jr., 21 minutes. Şengün, 20 minutes. I think this rotation, with the way we saw it through the first, you know, 3.5 quarters, was a lot more in line with what Rockets fans want to see, even though Daniel Tice did get the start. The free throw shooting was not ideal, still 70%. But 3-point shooting, 26%. And obviously, you know, that's those two things are going to be the game there. The turnovers, I believe, weren't as bad. 14 turnovers in this game. We've seen 14 turnovers and a half before, unfortunately, this season. But, you know, Prad, we'll go to you first. What is your, you know, just some quick takeaways from this, the Celtics game before we jump into segment two?
Yeah, nice and easy. Armani Brooks balled out. You can see that he feels Gerson Matthews on his heels looking for that spot on the permanent roster. It's really weird that Daniel House getting garbage time minutes because it doesn't really make any sense. I would much rather have Kylan Green like try and exploit these bad units out of other teams and gain some confidence back. And I mean, a little Sengun had a great game again, 7 assists, 2 turnovers, like some really good highlight plays. Kenyon Martin was really good as well. I wanted to highlight though is, so we've seen this first unit a lot, kind of like stay in the game in the beginning, like when they start, and then when players come back from halftime, they get smashed. And I wonder how much of that is they are able to like stay with other teams in the first like quarter, because those teams are like just getting into the game. They're playing this terrible Rockets team. They're probably not as engaged as they should be. And then in the third quarter, they realize, oh, okay, this is a close game. Maybe we should try. And that's when that unit like actually gets stomped. So I don't know how long this will keep going. But I mean, at this point, I don't even know what to say about this anymore.
Yeah, I think another thing is obviously these other teams are making adjustments coming out of halftime, and it seems like the Rockets really aren't doing a whole lot different. I mean, this team is so, I don't want to use the word impotent, but, you know, they're so ineffective offensively that, you know, they're barely able to run the stuff that they're trying to run. So for them to really take what they're trying to do, throw that all out, and then try something completely different, they can barely do the stuff that they're trying to initiate in the first place. So, you know, as other teams are seeing what the Rockets are doing, adjusting to that. But KP, get some quick hitter takeaways from you on the Celtics game as well.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they put together 1.5 quarters. I always like to think about how many good quarters in a game does this team play well? And you'd expect a young team not to be playing well for more than, I mean, maybe they put together 2 good quarters, 3 good quarters, especially one this young. And so I thought in the Celtics game it was about 1.5. And then as we all said, you know, after halftime, it just got destroyed. But I do think, you know, the biggest question is with Daniel Tice. I think he took way too many shots. And I just think that you can play him. I understand playing him from a coach's perspective. He's experienced. There may be other things that you're trying to teach beyond just, you know, having him out there. But I really don't. I think they can certainly tune how many possession he ends up using. I mean, that was something that I've now noticed over the last couple of games and really bothers me, and especially from the Celtics game. So figuring out how to actually get the players we want to have using the ball, Jalen Green, when Kevin Porter comes back, et cetera, how do we just make sure that they actually get the shots and they're initiating the offense, Sengun as well. And of course, Daniel Tice not taking whatever it was. At one point, he was second in the game in shots behind Jason Tatum. And I think it was just insane. So that was the one thing that I, you know, because I'm taking, as you guys know, I'm more of a longer term person of like, rotations will be rotations, we'll figure it out. You know, the young guys' minutes will only increase from here. But I just think even game to game, just figuring out the usage and giving our guys real opportunities when they are in the game, that's what I'm worried about. But I think KJ Martin has been a real bright spot, and I'm glad that we've been able to see him get more minutes, more opportunities. He just continues to make plays and have a positive impact. I think the coaching staff really likes him and Sengun together. And so that's just – it really just raises a question in watching the Celtics game of just like, at what point do you – just put KJ and Sengun in the starting lineup. And I don't know if we're ready for all that, the discussions there, but I mean, that pairing is really good. And they also play really well with Jalen. So, I mean, those types of things are my main reactions. I expected us to get beat. But we put together about 1.5 good quarters. So that was my takeaways from the game.
Yeah. And just to kind of circle back on some of the tie stuff, right. The lowest true shooting of his career this year, lowest or the second highest usage rate, the lowest assist to turnover ratio of his career and his lowest assist ratio. So, you know, not great stats there. And, you know, some of those are kind of situation dependent, right? You know, if Tyce is passing the ball to guys who are missing shots, and some of those numbers are going to go down as well. But not a lot good there, even, you know, if he's giving you a lot defensively. So that'll do it for segment one. We're going to talk about some of the guys that are, you know, lighting it up right now in college and may find themselves in a Rockets uniform going into next season due to the Rockets, you know, finally having their own pick without any risk of giving to the Thunder. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Looking for a better way to rep H-Town? Be sure to check out ApolloHOU.com for Astros and Rockets apparel you can't find anywhere else. Use promo code LAUNCH for 10% off at checkout. Apollo HOU. All Houston, all original.
And welcome back to another episode of the Launchpad Podcast. Coming back in from break, we're going to talk about, like we said, some draft stuff. Again, I'm joined by my other host, Prodigy, and our fellow Apollo HOU contributor, Stanford KP. So just want to say again, thanks for joining us, KP. I think the big thing last year, right, was, you know, yeah, Fade for Cade. And then after that, we realized we were going to get the second pick, and it was, you know, Green Gang versus Mobley Mob. And, you know, this year, there are two guys that were really coming into the season that were, you know, kind of the top two dogs in this one. There's no, it's a little less of a Fade for Cade, right, or, a, you know, whatever you want to call it for Zion, you know, blow it up for Zion, whatever the term was that year. I think this is a little more of a two-horse race. The guys that are really, you know, drawing the big interest are Paolo Banchero of Duke and Chet Holmgren of Gonzaga. And, you know, we saw these guys play a couple games so far. Earlier today, KP, you had a tweet that was saying, you know, let's kind of, you know, think about this. We went a different direction last year. And, you know, Chet Holmgren has a lot of things that, you know, really could be good factors for this Rockets team and the way the team is currently set up. Just break down that tweet you had earlier a little bit more.
Yeah.
And then get into, you know, why you like Chet. And then we'll let Prod handle Paolo. And then we kind of go back and forth on those two.
Yeah, sounds good. So my tweet was, Chet or Paolo would both be excellent on the Rockets. My preference is Chet because he can be dominant defensively. And the Rockets badly need a defensive anchor. And I think he, and you guys know my framework, he's a real two-way big in terms of a building block. And I just also think that, and so a couple of things. I really like Chet for a couple of reasons. One is his size and mobility and skill level you can't teach. I mean, he's just a true kind of unicorn from that standpoint. Two, he's got the defensive instincts. I mean, he just swallows things up. It's incredible to watch him defend on the perimeter, defend the rim, whatever. I mean, I think he just can really protect the rim. And that's something that we really don't have right now. And especially as you think about our core going forward. And then, you know, three, offensively, I just think he can do it all. He can shoot, he can pass, he can dribble, he can play make. He's just really a multifaceted player. And then, you know, last reason, it's less scientific. It's more to, he went head to head with Emmony Bates last year. And I thought that was one early signal of his mentality of, I think he has the right kind of, you know, mentality and mental makeup of really being aggressive and really kind of like asserting his will on the game. And I'm pretty high on his upside. I get the concerns around his body type. And that was a lot of what the comments were talking about of just, he's a string bean, you know, those guys get injured and you look at even Evan Mobley this year already hurt. I get those concerns. I actually think with us, he's an extremely good fit next to Şengün. I just think that they both would near seven. I mean, he's the 7-footer, Şengün's a near 7-footer. Şengün has a size and the kind of the thickness. And then Chet has a kind of more mobility, more length. And I actually think they can play well off each other, both defensively and offensively. So I just like the way that they can go. I think he's also a lob threat. He can do just so many things if I think about how he and Jalen could develop. So that's my my spiel on Chet Holmgren. I really do like Paolo, and I'll let you talk about him, but I really do like him. And I mean, he clears my bar of someone that I'd just be absolutely ecstatic to take. But right now I think I have Chet leading a little bit.
So one thing I want to touch on Chet, and I'm going to have a little question for you. Just kind of a follow-up real quick. You know, one thing that's been such a big issue this season for the Rockets has been free throw shooting. And, you know, currently Chet is shooting, 81% from the free throw line on three attempts per game. And, you know, that's not James Harden volume by any means, but, you know, three attempts per game is nothing to sneeze at. And, you know, 81% from the free throw line, some of the guys who've been rolling out this year have struggled a little bit from that area of the floor. How do you feel about, you know, Chet more as like, do you think he's like someone that could be a shot creator, or do you think he's someone that would be more of a dependent player? Because, you know, right now we have Christian Wood, who we saw him very effective in a more dependent role when Harden was here. And this year he's been touted more as, you know, someone who's trying to get his own shot and do those type of things. And then also who do you see as like a NBA comp for Chet? Those two things.
I think Chet has more. He has the ability to be an independent creator and player and get his own shot. I mean, you've seen him bring the ball up and just take it coast to coast, and in a way that just feels very natural to him. I know we've seen Christian Wood do it, but he's very reluctant to kind of consistently do it. I just think Chet will do that. He has a lot of different ways that he can finish at the basket. I mean, he's like, you know, almost hasn't missed around in the paint. So I think he can be good, you know, from an independent standpoint, and he can post up, he can drive, he can, in any, you know, he can certainly spot up and hit the three. So he's just like, you know, multifaceted player. I think he will also, to your point, be really good as a dependent player. And I think that would be really exciting with Jalen Green, but also you can run a two man big game with him and Şengün. So I just think there's a lot of potential in different ways to use him. In terms of a comp, you know, it's interesting because a lot of people go to like the Porzingis or the other thing. I think Chet's a lot more mobile. I see, you know, some of like very early rookie Durant, I see maybe a little flavor of that in him. He's like super long, super skinny, but able to handle, bring it up the floor. I see also a little bit of just like early super skinny Giannis in terms of the way that he can just kind of like bring the ball up and just attack the basket. I mean, both of those guys are obviously like Hall of Famers, MVPs, yeah, and that's absolutely, you know, unfair to Chet. But I just see some of those skills and just the ball handling, the mobility. I do think Chet has to work on his passing, but I don't know. I really think he's a unique prospect in just the way he can, you know, at such an age already, kind of be dominant both offensively and defensively.
Defensively, would you – sorry, one more follow-up. Defensively, would you put him more like Gobert? Would you put him more like Mobley, more like maybe like a Miles Turner? I mean, those are probably three of the preeminent defensive guys. You know, obviously Mobley's a rookie, but he really showed out a lot defensively.
I think he's pretty close to Mobley, actually. Yeah, I think they're you know, very, very nimble on the perimeter and then able to just – the length that these guys have to just like recover and defend the basket, but also just swallow up on the perimeter is crazy. So very favorably, I think, especially coming out in the way that Evan Mobley kind of, you could very easily see his defensive skills. I don't think Gobert is as nimble on the perimeter. But yeah, so that I would say pretty comparable to Evan. We'll see how the college season goes on, but that's my initial.
And I think he had a game earlier this year with like 7 blocks. And he's averaging 3.4 on the season and only 1.8 personal fouls. So that was a big hallmark of Mobley coming out, was he was able to be very effective as a rim protector while still maintaining a low foul rate. And I think that's something that's going to be very important. You know, Şengün, right, is a guy. You know, for all the things we love about Şengün, the one thing he really does struggle with is he has a high foul rate, and that's kind of preventing him from playing more minutes. And, you know, you can see Chet be able to come in and not foul as much and be able to stay on the floor a little bit more. So, Prod, we're going to jump over to you now. What do you like about Paolo Banchero? What have you seen so far? And, you know, why would you like him for the Rockets next year?
I mean, like – And Kerr is literally like already, he could be in the NBA already, and he would like, I would take him as a Rookie of the Year contender with the current draft class. He's someone who is 6'10", he's 250 pounds. Like, he's already, he's ready to be in the NBA. We are a team that has, when we draft him, has 2 years left before they have to really try and be in playoff or play-in contention, because we start throwing picks to the Thunder then. And Bankero is just exactly that. He's someone who's going to come in, who's going to be ready for whatever's thrown at him. He's someone that's really physical. That's someone that doesn't have any trouble like being an offensive hub from the post, being a passer from in the short role. He's someone that literally has no holes to his game, but he's also not elite at everything. What I mean by this is, so Ben Simmons is someone who's elite at some stuff, but then has some glaring holes to his game. Like, he isn't aggressive enough. He doesn't shoot the three. Banchero might not be the most efficient three-point shooter, and we'll see how this develops as the season goes on, but he is willing to shoot them. He's taking three threes a game. He's shooting 31% from three, but another good indicator of shooting is usually how good the guy at converting his free throws. And Kets is attempting 4.7 free throws and hitting like 86% of them. So that's a really good indicator as well. And above all, Banchero is, I guess that's Kets just now, but Banchero is someone who can generate his own shot and be a constant mismatch and a constant like points of focus on the offense. We've seen Jalen Green. We know Jalen Green can be a really good off-ball player. So Banchero is a really good guy to have, like, set him up. And between Sengun and Banchero, I think they both can fit together. I think they can do a lot of the same things. But Banchero can also, like, play on the perimeter. Banchero can do your Giannis-type job with handling in the perimeter and then using his strength to score in the paint. He also has, I would say, good defensive instincts. He's not as good defensively as Chet, not even close. Like, Chet's someone who's literally going to swallow up pretty much any archetype you find in the NBA. He has the length to do that, but he's someone who's going to be ready for the tough matchups. He's going to be ready. His feet are I think, quick enough to guard at least, like, threes and fours. I'm not sure how we'll handle fives in the NBA, because that's really tough to tell, because there's not quite a thing as NBA fives in college, not really anything comparable. But I mean, it just feels like he is all right. You can clearly see how he can become a superstar in this league. He's a known archetype. He's someone who's good in the post. He's good. Has a good handle. Can do. It's really versatile offensively. And the reason I have him, since this is pretty much a two-man race, the reason I have him over Chet is, so I understand that Chet has this crazy wingspan. I think it's 7'7", and that he's really mobile, and that he could become, you could bank on him staying skinny and being like a KD type. You could bank on him bulking up a little bit and be more of a Porzingis type, but it's really uncertain. And I had this concern with Mobley last year, but I think it is more valid with Chet, because Chet is skinnier. Chet is also taller, and I think Mobley has better defensive instincts when it comes to how he positions himself when guarding on the perimeter. So I just feel like it's a lot of risk to draft a guy like Chet, and it's a home run kind of pick. If he works out, he's going to be like a, I think if he works out, he's going to be a brand new MVP candidate, just because there's no limits to what he does. He could shoot over everyone. He could like swallow everyone up on defense. To me, it depends on how well will he create for himself. And on this team, we can tell that by themselves, a lot of our guys struggle to create. They rely really heavily on what sets they're running, and we see how when the offense develops into ISOs, we really struggle. We really rely on everyone moving to create any kind of advantages. So I think Banchero provides that, someone who can like by himself create advantages. And I'm not sure Chet can do that yet. We see him try to power through guys, and I'm not sure how that will work on in the NBA. We see him like handle the ball, but I'm not sure how well he'll be able to get past this guy and create some imbalance on the defense. But on the other hand, he's someone that you can see the potential on every single level. It's just really fulfill that potential. And I feel like I'm a lot more confident saying that Banchero will fulfill his potential than I am saying Chet will fulfill his.
So I think one other thing to talk about these two guys is, you know, both of them really seem to be like, you know, high level competitors, right? You know, by all accounts, you know, Chet's a guy that, you know, he's competed well internationally. And even though he kind of joined a quote unquote like super team on Gonzaga, you know, Banchero kind of did the same thing joining Duke, right? Those aren't rosters like we saw, you know, some of these other guys that went to small schools, like, you know, John Moran in college really had to carry his entire team in. And who's the guy who's in at the university in Wisconsin right now?
Patrick Baldwin.
Yeah, Patrick Baldwin. You know, he went to a small school and he's going to really have to do a lot for his team this year. You know, both these guys
struggling at that too.
Yeah. Both these guys went to more, you know, kind of quote unquote super teamy type of situations, but they're still really shining even given that roster construction. And I think Paolo Banchero had some good international play episodes as well, but we've heard a lot about, you know, Chet really being a competitor, a guy that does talk a little trash and kind of will get at guys like that. And Banchero, from what we've heard of reports early on, you know, just someone who's very instinctive defensively and may not be the best defender, but someone who's not going to, you know, have the shades what we have with James Harden, where he, you know, just not in the right place off ball and things like that. I think by all accounts, Banchero is someone that's going to be, you know, very attentive defensively, going to be in the right spot at all times and, you know, making the correct plays there and things like that. So I think overall, we'll circle back to Banchero one more time. I'll let both of your answers. We'll go to Prop first. How do you like Banchero's fit with Şengün? Because you are going to a more, we'll say, moderately sized front court there. You know, it's not a small front court. It's not, you know, PJ Tucker and Eric Gordon type of front court, right? If you're going super small, it's two guys that are at least, you know, 6'10", maybe a little taller. But how do you like those two's fit together? We'll go to Prop first.
Yeah, I think whoever you take, whenever you take them, Christian Wood no longer has a spot on this team. And I think that's important to mention because you can't, like, people say you can, but I'm really not comfortable with playing either of them as a three. And when it comes to Şengün, so Şengün's someone who moves the ball really well. He's someone who can operate from the post. Who can operate from the top of the key. Someone who is really... is trying to add a three-pointer to his game. So he's someone who seems to be working on being as versatile as possible, and Banchero is the same way. I understand that you're probably lacking a little bit of length in that front court, but on the other hand, in my opinion, you can't just run teams out of the building. I think Şengün's defensive instincts are also really good. You could lack some rim protection there. That might be a little bit, now that I think about it, that might be a little bit a problem. But
I think it just makes point of attack defense even more critical. Exactly. Right? You can't just be giving up straight line drives to the rim the way you would not be able to, but, you know, be more able to cover up with the Chet. KP, what are your thoughts on, you know, how that front court would look and, you know, what that would mean for Christian Wood and his time in Houston?
Yeah, I mean, either way. Yeah, sorry about that. I think Christian Wood, to the point, it's hard to see him here too much longer. Now they may choose to develop the rookie slowly, but I'm not too worried about Christian Wood. I mean, he's going to be a free agent in 2 years and. In a year, I guess. And so I think, you know, whether he's there next year or not really doesn't matter too much to me. I think it's but to your point around the pairing with Şengün, that's really why I like Chet. I think that he can protect the rim. He can also play, they can play together. Because I think Paolo, the best way that he achieves his potential is you kind of like funnel the offense through him in the same way that, actually, right now we want to have both Jalen and Şengün start to play make, and so I would really, if we were to take Paolo, I actually think we need like a real point guard to then kind of be able to set all these guys up in the right space, have them play off of each other. Otherwise, you know, I think it's going to be pretty hard, because I don't think you want Paolo just spotting up in the corner, right? You'd want him actually like playmaking. You want to go to him, but and do a lot of the things you actually do want to do with Şengün. So that fit actually is, and I've been so impressed with Şengün. I really think he's a future part of our core, is why I like Chet, even though, I mean, the talent on Banchero is undeniable, but it's obviously too early to be thinking about fit, you know, with the pieces like this, but it's a really good question, because like, how can you really, ideally you're able to maximize all the strengths of your core going forward. So it's something we can't ignore.
And, you know, the Rockets have played small for so long, and it's the main thing with playing small for me has been rebounding. And I think we're starting to go the other way a little bit on, you know, rebounding. Şengün is a good positional rebounder. KMJ is a good positional rebounder. Jalen Green, you know, someone who should be able to rebound very well for his position. And if KPJ sticks around, you know, has a good size advantage, I think those guys can, you know, be more attentive to boxing out and things like that. But, you know, getting someone like Chet, you know, should help the rebounding hypothetically as well. But I think that was some good light talk for them. And that's going to be a discussion going on for the rest of this year, just on those two guys for sure. With the Rockets losing so many games, we're going to be in the mix for a top pick kind of no matter what. So we're going to be, you know, in the Chet versus Banchero conversation. I don't think we've established names for the groups yet, but I'm sure that's coming very shortly here with the losing we've done. So with that, we're going to wrap segment two. When we come back, we're going to do a real quick preview of the Bulls game for Wednesday and then go ahead and wrap up. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Looking for a better way to rep H-Town? Be sure to check out ApolloHOU.com for Astros and Rockets apparel you can't find anywhere else. Use promo code LAUNCH for 10% off at checkout. Apollo HOU, all Houston, all original.
And welcome back in for our final segment here on the Launchpad Podcast, presented by, you know, Apollo HOU, Apollo Media. Once again, I'm joined by my fellow host, Prodigy, and fellow Apollo contributor, Stanford KP. Once again, KP, thanks for being here. Thanks for joining us. Just for this last segment, we're going to do a little bit of a preview of the Bulls game on Wednesday. So like we mentioned in the first segment, KPJ is back for this game. So it will be interesting to see what Coach Steven Silas does with the lineups. Last game, he rolled out Jalen Green, Eric Gordon, Jayshon Tate, Christian Wood, and Daniel Tice. You know, obviously one of those guys is now going to have to move back to the bench when they bring KPJ back. So the likely chance is it's either going to be Gordon or Daniel Tice. I think a lot of people are hoping that we end up going back to a more small lineup and have, you know, the three guards of KPJ, Jalen Green, and Eric Gordon in the starting rotation, and then Christian Wood at center. You know, Gordon is a guy with his size. He's able to defend a position up, sometimes even two positions up. He did do a good job last game on Tatum and on Horford as well. So, you know, that's definitely an option. With the Bulls coming in, I believe Vucevic is questionable. So, you know, how they want to play that is up in the air, kind of depending on if he's able to play. Alex Caruso is questionable as well. You know, Caruso is a guy that he comes off the bench, I think, for Chicago, but, you know, very good defender, is going to make it hard for Jalen Green and KPJ, especially in KPJ's first game back. Just some quick, you know, notes on the Bulls here. Offensively, they rank 12th per Basketball Reference with 109 offensive rating. Defensively, they are also 12. A lot of people didn't think they were going to be a good defensive team coming into the year with the addition of DeRozan and, you know, how LaVine has looked traditionally defensively. But they have been good so far. Like I said, almost top 10 in both categories. And, you know, with LaVine and DeRozan doing more sharing of the offensive load, it does open up it allows them to, you know, focus a little bit more defensively. And then they have Lonzo Ball and Alex Caruso, as we mentioned, you know, two guys that are very good defensively. The rookie Ayo Dosunmu, you know, another guy that's, you know, had some good minutes for them as well. Dosunmu is playing 16 minutes per game, 44% from the field, but 41% from three on, you know, three attempts per game. You know, pretty good for a rookie, and you know, able to give them some minutes. And Kobe White, you know, another guy that is going to present some problems in the backcourt as well. KP, we'll go to you. You know, just real quick, you know, what are you looking for in this game, whether it be from the Rockets or how they match up against the Bulls? You know, we're coming off, you know, however many straight losses right now, but, you know, still want to see them go out there and play the best game they possibly can. So what are you looking for in this game? Just some quick hitting stuff.
Yeah. I want them to put together three good quarters. I think that would be good. Just have a competitive game for a good portion of it. I think it'll be a high scoring affair. I am interested. I think the biggest matchup to me is, you know, Lonzo and Caruso and like the defensive pressure that they're able to put on the perimeter and versus kind of how our KP and Jalen, like, are we able to still get into the paint, still attack? I really would want to see Jalen be aggressive. I think it'd be good. I mean, especially he's playing a guy that, or I mean, we're playing a guy that a lot of people comped him to in terms of Zach LaVine and kind of the trajectory there. So it'd be interesting to see how he kind of mentally comes out. I do think it's actually a decent game for someone like Christian Wood to actually have a, you know, with a solid performance. And so that'd be something hopefully that happens. And then otherwise, you know, I really think that having KJ and Shingun just like building on the momentum in terms of the rotations that we see. And then of course I'll keep harping back to it, but I do not want Daniel Theis to take 15 shots. So that's the only thing I'm looking for. But no, otherwise I think I really do think actually it might be a closer game than we think. I don't expect us to win, but I think it could be a pretty fun up and down kind of game. And hopefully we can get out in transition and see our guards shine a little bit.
Yeah. And just to the point, you know, Chicago is second in the East right now. So they are off to a very good start. One of the best starts they've had probably, you know, in a number of years, probably since Derrick Rose was there. But Prad, let's jump over to you. You know, what are you looking for in this game? What are your thoughts on, you know, the starting lineup? We'll just, you know, rehash that as much as it's been, you know, beaten to death.
I mean, it's, if there was a game for Theis not to start, it would be this one. Like against the Celtics, you can argue that you want Theis like guarding, what's his name, Horford, and then the game before you want Theis guarding Julius Randle. The Bulls don't have a physical big if Vucevic's not playing, and I think he's questionable, right? So, and then if they don't have that Vucevic, and their big rotation is what is Tony Bradley, like Derrick Jones Jr., small ball five, maybe sometimes. They gave minutes last game to Marko Simonovic, so it makes no sense. And if Theis ends up starting again, because even if you go matchup reliant, it doesn't make sense. Like Theis is actually going to be a liability on defense because he's going to be forced out onto the perimeter. And the Bulls the Bulls are a two-creator team. They have DeRozan and LaVine, and we don't really have anyone to stop them. I mean, Eric Gordon can do a decent job, but if those guys are hitting, I'll just say it, we're doomed. If those guys are having a good game, then there's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah.
But other than that, with Caruso and Vucevic out, there really is what's left there. It's Lonzo Ball, who's never been a good guy at creating his own shot. Then I guess you got Kobe White, who's someone who is really slippery and can get his own buckets. But just feels like it's a really weakened Bulls team. So we'll see. We'll see how we handle it. I expect a lot more single big lineups on the floor, and that's something that we've been like trying to say about Salas is, it's okay to adjust your lineup according to the opposing team. And hopefully this is one of the times that comes into place.
Yeah, for sure. I think that was a good point you made about, you know, they're starting front court, especially with Vucevic out. And, you know, if Vucevic were to play, you know, we've seen a lot of players come back against the Rockets. You know, they can kind of be like a tune-up game against a lesser opponent. We saw that with Jaylen Brown last night, you know, came back and then really got rolling in the second half. But you know, Vucevic would be coming off of a 6-game absence, you know, on the COVID list. So, you know, not someone who's just missing for, you know, a kind of a minor injury. He's had COVID for a while now. And, you know, that's hard, that everyone's going to deal with that virus differently. But, you know, we'll see what he were to look like if he is able to come back. Because, you know, like I said, some people, you know, just react differently to having that virus. You know, we saw Westbrook when he came off of having COVID. For us, you know, he did struggle. And, you know, that was pre-vaccine, to be fair. And I don't know what Vucevic's vaccine status is. I'm not going to speculate on that. But, you know, we will see what he looks like, you know, coming out of that COVID break. But, KP, do you have any closing thoughts on the Bulls, or can we go ahead and wrap up here?
I'm good. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I'm good. Yeah, no, I'm good. And I'm just excited for it to see them back at home and back from the road trip. It seemed like they got kind of tired towards the end of that trip. And so it'll be good to get back home in front of the fans and just hoping for, yeah, a good game.
Awesome. So I think that's going to do it for us. KP, go ahead and tell everyone where they can find you at.
Yeah. You can find me at Stanford KP. Thanks again, guys, for having me on. It was a real pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. Love some of the draft stuff as well. And then love getting your takes on a lot of the contracts as well. I know you're pretty thorough with a lot of the contractual, you know, goings on in the league. So definitely appreciate your input there. You know, as are you, Prod. You know, you're someone who's very good at the contract and the CBA side of it as well. So with that, Prod, go ahead and tell the people where they can find you as well.
Yeah, you can find me at Prodigy NBA without the Y on Prodigy, of course. Everything I do, from articles, podcasts, even single tweets, it will all eventually be linked from the Twitter. So that's pretty much the hub, you know.
Absolutely. And as always, you know, y'all can find me on Twitter at Don Knock and on the Air app. Same username there, at Don Knock. We're trying to get some more Air stuff out. Air is A-I-R-R, by the way. I did a halftime segment on the last game. I'm going to try to make that a little bit more regular and get those out for every game. I think it's a good way to just kind of get some concise thoughts out during halftime and really utilize that time well while everyone's kind of taking a break. I was trying to get one out pregame, wasn't able to do it. Had some little tech difficulties there, but may try to get some pregame stuff out on that app as well. And of course, I'll blast that to Twitter. That's a good setup. We can just, you know, shoot that to Twitter as a video. So y'all will be able to watch them there. If you want to follow in the Air app, of course, do that as well. And go ahead, follow the pod at Apollo Launchpad. Follow the Apollo flagship account at Apollo HOU. You know, subscribe, rate, review to the pod on whether it's Spotify or Apple. Really appreciate y'all doing that so you can get the pod, you know, right when it comes out. And then we'll make sure we blast them out on Twitter as well. Taylor is currently working on a KMJ shirt. He has the Shingun stretch big shirt that just came out, and then of course we have the Jalen Green skull themed shirt, and then the KPJ Joker themed shirt as well. Definitely some great stuff coming out, Taylor, right now. I want to, you know, show him some love, and you know, like I said, those are incredible shirts. You can get all that at apollohou.com, so check there. I think that's going to do it for us. So thanks for tuning in, and go Rockets.